there's lots of differences between a SaaS and a community, obviously, but an underappreciated thing is like a SaaS, if you run a SaaS, you can afford to be less picky about who your customers are. Like it almost, if someone will pay, it almost doesn't matter who they are to a set in most cases, right? If you run a SaaS. However, if you run a community, you need to also ensure that they are the right fit for the community.
All right, welcome back to Indie Worldwide. Today I have with us Charlie Ward, founder of weekendclub.co, as well as Indie London. How's it going, Charlie?
Not bad, thanks, Anthony. Good to chat. How you doing?
Always like to chat.
Oh, it's just one very brief correction, actually, just because I don't want to... That's being correct. So actually, my friend Jizlan founded Indie London, but he moved out of London to Norway. So I'm more of the kind of owner and steward of Indie London now. But I did found Weekend Club.
Okay. Well, then we got Charlie Ward, owner and steward of Indie London and founder of Weekend Club.
I haven't used the word steward before in this context, but maybe I should more.
I think it works. So you want to give us a quick overview of what is Indie London, what is Indie World, what is Weekend Club?
Yeah, Indie London is the London's largest indie hackers community. So it's, it's a Slack and newsletter, but it's also events. It's quite focused on kind of in-person meetups and, you know, building the London bootstrapper ecosystem. Weekend Club takes up more of my time, and it's a remote co-working space for founders. It's a paid community, and it's primarily we're best known for our Saturday weekend co-working. So if you've got a day job and you are building something on weekend, we create a community built around that. So it makes working on weekends more fun, more sociable, more accountable, and easier to meet other like-minded founders kind of thing. So yeah, that's probably my main project.
Are these both online now with COVID?
Currently, Weekend Club is 100% remote. All of it's remote events. That might change this summer. We might start doing in-person events again. Indie London is, we've actually been doing a few in-person meetups recently. We've done about 3 in the last month. So we're going to just continue having like a monthly schedule, in the UK, from the 21st of June, that's when it's going back to normal. What that means is like you can just go out with large groups of people again, and like at the moment that'll be fine. So from then it's kind of normal services resume. So we'll be aiming for like maybe a couple of events per month as well, or something, just to kind of get people meeting up.
Are you planning to do the in-person? Because now Weekend Club's like all over the place, right? Like you went remote and then you opened up new chapters and new time zones. Yeah. How's that going to work with adding in back in in-person events?
Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't immediately be like everywhere or anything like that. You know, it's quite a lot of effort just to set up one chapter of this in one place. So we would just start in London because, you know, obviously I live here, and most of our members, not all of them, but like there's enough members here that we can kind of get that started the most easily of any city. So the first priority is to restart that. However, I do think there's an opportunity to spread this to other cities as well. I think it would mainly work in larger cities. Like maybe it'll work in smaller ones as well, but obviously there has to be a co-working space. So co-working spaces are mainly in like large towns and cities, right? I just need to think about how that model would work, basically. I think
maybe
it does require having, to scale, you need to have your members starting to run the events. It's just about creating the right incentive structure that works for everyone. So just need to work on that a bit, but I think it's possible.
How are you getting people to run? Like, how are you convincing your community members or converting them from community members to event runners? What does that process look like?
Yeah, so we have 3 members who run Weekend Club sessions. So that's 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Every Saturday. And it's in 2 time zones, UK time and US time, Central time. And either they've two of the three I reached out to because I thought they were a good fit in terms of they're very active members. I thought, you know, I thought they had the potential to be good kind of hosts and community builders sort of thing if they weren't already. And, you know, I just reached out to them and kind of went from there. And one person has also approached me when I said, hey, we're looking for more hosts sort of thing. So the main ingredients are, like, you know, they are an active member of the community is really important. Then also the potential to kind of be a host sort of thing. And, you know, I think a lot of people have the potential to do that. You know, some need a bit more kind of guidance than others, but I think a lot of people have it in them sort of thing. So
I guess it'd be a similar process for the in-person as the virtual.
So I think in person it'll be similar. The only difference is, like, you know, if someone has to physically go to a real location and manage that, that's a bit of a bigger ask than just staying at home and doing it from your laptop, because you also need to, like, open up at a certain time, you need to lock up. There's a little bit more to it, so I think we might need to kind of increase the incentives to make that work, if that makes sense.
Right. I guess depending on how involved the space is that you're able to find, if they already have somebody managing the space and locking up after you, it lowers the ask a little bit on your
community members. It depends on the space, I guess. Yeah, like there might be some places where they're like, look, we've got a community manager, they can just do it or something. And maybe just do a revenue share of the space. Like, there might be sometimes like that, but on the other hand, I think it's good when the host is, like, formally a member of the community, because they just understand the culture and they build better relationships with people and stuff, you know? So I probably lean towards getting a member to do it, and getting the space to kind of help us, like, make this happen.
I was just thinking about kind of the logistical stuff, like putting out the chairs, closing up afterwards. When I was doing in-person events also before COVID, I found, like, all the co-working spaces, I guess they just didn't trust me. They always wanted somebody there that would close up after us. So that was never part of it.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, I mean, there might be an element of that, you know, if they can spare it. You know, I guess, like, some of them might be wary if they're letting a bunch of people they don't know. And there might be new people every couple of weeks. Do you know what I mean? There might regularly be new people and they don't have much visibility. So you just need to, there's basically risks to mitigate with something in person that you don't need to worry about when it's remote, you know, like a stranger coming in. I don't know, like just being really messy or whatever it is. So yeah, got all this stuff to work out still.
Yeah, we normalized virtual events and now it's back to in person, and there's always extra logistics we forgot about.
I know, right? But there's like definitely benefits to both, like remote. You know, some people don't live somewhere where they can access a co-working space, right? So remote is always going to be the default option for those people. And there's that, you know, there's little things like you can buzz in someone for a Q&A, for example, anywhere in the world, or you can get people from different countries together. You can never do that in person, obviously. So there's just kind of, I don't think one's better than the other. I think they just have different pluses and minuses, and there's trade-offs for everything, you know.
So what's the set of incentives for the community leaders? What are you offering them to take over?
So for the remote ones, I don't think I want to go into like the exact dollar figure, but we give them like a flat like fee for the day,
so they're paid, big incentive.
So we do pay them like per per day, but they also get a free membership for the overall as long as they do 2 a month. And it's all, I mean, though, that's like the extrinsic stuff, but like, you know, they wouldn't do it if they didn't like the community and want to like contribute to it as well. Like the extrinsic stuff's not enough, I don't think. And, you know, we also, it's a good way of building community skills and raising their profile as well. You know, we try and shout out our hosts like where we can. So, yeah, we try and kind of approach it from, a few angles, you know.
So how many chapters are there now, including the ones you run yourself?
Well, there's currently the EMEA, so like Europe, which is on like 10 a.m. till 5 BST UK time. But there's also America's 10 till 5 Central, so 2 at the moment. One day maybe we'll have a couple more. Like, I think there's appetite to do one in India, certainly, and potentially like Australasia, like that time zone that's like Japan all the way down to Australia.
Yeah.
But, you know, opening new time zones is like, I've realized it's a huge amount of effort. Because if you want to run it every week reliably, right, it's a lot of work to get off the ground. So I'm kind of focusing on some other stuff first before we do another time zone, I think. But one day, I suspect we might.
What's the other stuff?
So at the moment, it's basically a weekday version of Weekend Club. Mm. So I realized...
Weekday Club.
Yeah, Weekday Club. Yeah. Originally, it was just a code name, but like I haven't thought of a better name. So that's just what it's called right now. So, I mean, to be honest, people have actually been asking for this literally since we began in 2019. Mm. This is not like a new idea. Someone was saying, oh, it'd be awesome to do this Monday to Friday as well as that. So, you know, it's not totally new, but we've only just started actually doing it. There's always an idea that we would do it someday. So, I've been working on that basically. And that's kind of events that happen throughout the week. And soon some member-led events as well. So like not just... So when I say member-led events, I mean we already have the Saturday ones run by our members, but these are more like someone runs like a workshop during the week that isn't me, or like runs some other kind of thing. So this is pivoting it towards like a more broadly a remote co-working space, if that makes sense. So yeah, that's what I've been thinking a bit more about recently, because I realize about maybe a third of our members are full-time on their projects now, which was not the case at the beginning. So we just need to do things that cater to those people more. So it was kind of a no-brainer.
Mm-hmm. How many members do you have right now across all the different times?
We've got about between 60 and 65. I think we've got 63 subscribers right now. And there's usually a bunch of free trialists. We've got a target for me to go full time. We probably need to double our revenue, I'd say. So hopefully we can do that by the end of the year.
So you're around like £2,000 a month now?
A bit less, yeah. So in dollars, it's about just under $2,500 a month, which is like £1,800 roughly. So yeah, just need to get that up. But, you know, because I've been focusing, I still have a day job 3 days a week, so which I really enjoy. But, you know, it means there's only so much time to put towards growth, because it's a lot of effort, just as you know, running Indie Worldwide. It's a lot of effort just to keep a community in the same spot. Like to grow it as well is like just extra effort. So it's just about taking out time to do that as well.
Is there like a number where you hit and then you quit your day job?
It's around $5,000 MRR, but I probably could before that, I reckon. Mm-hmm. Like if I just reduce my costs a little bit. So I reckon if it got to 4,000, I might quit anyway. But 5,000 is like the kind of number I could put out into the internet on Twitter and stuff.
So you gotta roughly double the size of the club.
Yeah.
If you want to go full time on it.
I'd say so, yeah.
And so what's the plan for that? Because it sounds like that is the plan.
Sorry. So what's the plan for that?
What's the plan for that? What's the plan for doubling the size?
Yeah. Well, I mean, offering us. I mean, the first thing was offering the Weekend Club America's sessions, which we launched in January, and so that's been good so far. So that was like that just increased our potential audience by quite a lot. Like, you know, like how many people live in the Americas, like, I don't know, between 500 million, 800 million or something like that. Off the top of my head.
There's a few.
Yeah, it's a lot of people. I mean, obviously those are not all bootstrappers, or like potential customers, but you know, it just increased the reach. So that was one thing. And the second thing is offering weekday clubs. So this is just, again, it opens up potential mm-hmm. our potential audience. So that's one side, just having the systems in place to accommodate different people. However, I need to do more kind of traditional growth stuff. So apart from like, you know, doing things like interviews, we don't create really any content at Weekend Club. But we have like great stories from our members. There's lots of content I think we could create and we just never done it. So I think that's the most like obvious thing that we need to start doing. Maybe start doing a bit more with like incentivizing referrals, like giving people affiliate links, maybe ads, I don't know. But ads,
how have you been growing so far? Like until now, how have you gotten like the 63 people that are currently signed up?
I mean, the first kind of 20 was probably through my own kind of network from running meetups, like people I knew. Mm-hmm. But then after that, it was a combination of Indie London's actually quite a good funnel for this, like through the newsletter. And I think we've got about 600 people in the newsletter. It's not massive, but it's like enough to make some difference. And that's Slack. So that's actually a good channel for us. Also just Twitter, just tweeting about stuff. Referrals, posting on Indie Hackers itself. It's quite basic. It's not like a really sophisticated thing, but these things sort of add up over time. And I think there's a lot more we could have done, and that's, you know, that's my fault. But, you know, on the other hand, if we can get to like a decent enough place without doing tons of marketing, it makes me hopeful that if we start, that it should help us.
Have you launched on any of the like launch sites, Product Hunt or Hacker News, anywhere like that?
Yeah, I should have mentioned actually. Yeah, we did launch on Product Hunt at the beginning of March, which mm-hmm. went well. We got in the top five, which means we got in the newsletter, so we were fourth overall. I realized like launching on this on a Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday is brutal. It's so competitive. Like, mm-hmm. you know, like everyone else in that top five had like a really big Product Hunter hunt them, which goes out to like mm-hmm. all their followings and. So yeah, it was very competitive. So if I did it in future, I would consider doing it on like a slightly less competitive day for sure.
And then from the launch, how many signups did you get? Was it worthwhile?
It was worth, yeah, I think we probably got, well, I mean, in terms of actually signing up on email, we probably got like 80, but like of people that became customers, we probably did get like 10 or 15 or so, which is pretty good, I'd say.
And then you're about to launch Weekday Club, so that's, you get a new URL for that, you can launch again, get another 20 customers-ish.
Yeah, I don't know if we'll do a different URL. Like, I think it will be more like a sub-brand. Like, I think it makes mm-hmm. sense to just keep the headline brand Weekend Club, because otherwise it gets a bit complicated with different websites or URLs. But maybe like Weekday Club, from Weekend Club. But I don't know, it maybe it's a bit clunky. I need to think about this a bit more. But I think
weekendclub.co/weekdayclub.
Yeah, maybe.
That's all you really need is a new landing page so that it counts as a different product.
Yeah, although I think it's a big enough update that like it warrants another Product Hunt launch, because it's like mm-hmm. it's quite a lot of new stuff. It's not just like a few events, there's like a few things we've added. There's like masterminds, there's like member-led events, there's we've got like a fractional CFO, so like we've got a channel where like a financial advisor will like advise people on financial stuff they've got going on. So yeah, hopefully Product Hunt's are kind of okay about it, because it's not just like
the rule's like 6 months and a big update and then you can repost.
Is there a 6 month rule?
I think there is 6 months, or you just make a different URL and landing page and then you can launch every month.
Nice.
Companies do that.
I need to check this out actually. I need to figure it out, because ideally I'd like to launch it by the beginning of July. But yeah, let me see. Well, you got, I'm talking to the right person, you got a number one for Indie Worldwide, didn't you?
So I kind of did this separate URL thing. So we launched a challenge that was its own whole brand. Yeah. And then that challenge happened to be hosted by Indie Worldwide. And so I've never actually launched Indie Worldwide on Product Hunt. I've only ever launched things kind of on the back of Indie Worldwide. So I launched Founders Club there. That did okay. I think it was like top five, or maybe it was like top six. And then the 100-100 Challenge also launched on Product Hunt with its own whole URL. You guys should do some kind of weekend club challenge, you know? You're like, it could be anything. People really like challenges as long as it has a catchy name. People sign up. Catchy name and a low barrier to entry. Yeah.
Yeah, you give me an idea, actually, of how this might work. I don't think it would be exact. I mean, it would be, I'm trying to keep it like more specific to Weekend Club rather than trying to copy what you're doing. Because, you know, I don't think we'll be able to do it better than you're doing, that kind of thing. Maybe there's something just around like on, you know, a Weekend Club light version that's just on Twitter. So like, just like at the start of the day, share what you're going to get done and share it again at the end and demo what you've got done, just async. That could be quite interesting.
That would be cool. I recommend putting a time limit on it for the first time, for the first round, at least for the first iteration. Like say like, hey, we're going to do a 1 month build on the weekend challenge here on Twitter.
Yeah.
And then, cause it's just, it's like psychologically it's easier to commit to something for a month than it is forever or 3 months or 100 days.
Yeah, time box it.
Mm-hmm. Then people know, like, okay, I think I can put energy into this for that amount of time.
That's cool. Yeah, I agree. I definitely agree. Like, some kind of time boxing or scarcity, like, definitely, like, having a deadline, like, helps a lot. Yeah, I've written all this down, actually. I think maybe this is a good idea.
Once you hit on something, just launch it, though. It's like, you'll see right away if there's traction. And once there's traction, you'll be motivated to keep pushing on it.
Yeah, for sure, for sure.
Minimum viable.
Yeah, this, I can't wait till I have a bit more time.
Yeah, like, that's the thing.
I honestly, I'm so like, I'm so, even now, I'm just like, oh yeah, this I can get this much done in a week, and it's always half, like half of it.
Yeah.
Is done at the end of the week, I'm just like, how do I not learn my lesson?
Maybe if you set your goals even like twice as high, and you get half of that, and it'd be twice what you're currently doing.
Yeah, maybe.
I find my energy varies a lot week to week. Some weeks I get everything done and more, and then other weeks it's like not even half, it's a tenth of what I wanted to get done.
I know, it's insane, isn't it?
Yeah, we got to be kind to ourselves though, you know. As long as you keep working on it over time, that's what eventually pays dividends, is just showing up.
I guess it's like not supposed, you know, I guess it's not supposed to be easy. Like, I'm sure, you know, I'm sure there's like, it doesn't need to be brutal, and it isn't, I'm not saying it is brutal, it isn't brutal, I wouldn't say, but like, you know, it's just like, it's hard. Like, you know, creating reading is hard sometimes, right?
Yeah, I'm realizing a lot of it's just time though, especially with community. It's like there's only so much you can do to grow. Some component of it is just time for it to like mature and kind of grow on its own and develop a character.
But I think that there's lots of differences between a SaaS and a community, obviously, but an underappreciated thing is like if you run a SaaS, you can afford to be less picky about who your customers are. Like, it almost, if someone will pay, it almost doesn't matter who they are to a set in most cases, right? If you run a SaaS. However, if you run a community, you need to also ensure that they are the right fit for the community, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like, you don't need to worry about stuff like moderate. Like, there might be an unfortunate case where you have to remove someone from a community occasionally, or not let someone in. But in a SaaS, you generally don't need to worry about that so much. And that kind of makes growth a little bit harder. There's an extra dimension you've got to consider, right?
Yeah. I guess communities are unique in that your customers are also your product.
Yeah. To a certain extent, yeah. Like, a huge part of it.
So growing the your revenue base is also changing what the actual product is. And like, one community member can drastically change the flavor of the whole community if they're influential within your community. If they're very like outspoken, they can make people uncomfortable, or they can make people feel welcome. They can make somebody's experience really nice or really sucky just by being a good person or an asshole in the context of your group.
Yeah. Yeah, I suspect that, like, you know, moderate, you know, a lot of people that start communities, well, like myself and like maybe like you as well, like, did you have much kind of training or anything community building before you started doing?
Before Indie Worldwide, I didn't have training. I had experience through like running little things in my hometown, like volunteering, and then in college I started running hackathons. So I was in charge of big hackathon called Big Camp. I helped set up another hackathon called Technica, and that kind of threw me into the deep end. And then after that, I started doing local indie hacker meetups, and then after that, I started Indie Worldwide. So it wasn't my first go at a community, but it was my first like fully virtual community, and definitely the one I've committed to for the longest period of time.
Yeah, well, I think we're actually quite similar then, because I mean, before Weekend Club Online Remote, I mean, it was just like in-person meetups, a bit like what you did. So it sounded, yeah, I didn't have any kind of formal training, but I suspect one of the biggest, for people that start doing this, like, I suspect moderation might be the thing people are the least prepared for, like having to do that. I don't know what the answer to this is, but like, I think maybe there should be some more support groups for how to deal with moderation issues. I think actually the least, what I realize is like the black and white stuff is the easiest to deal with, where it's like really, someone's really clearly broken a guideline or something, but so many things are not black and white. It's like loads of gray areas and it's a bit subjective, you know? So I think that's an interesting challenge for new community builders for sure.
Do you have a philosophy or a goal to your moderation?
You know, it's not something I've done tons of or anything, you know, just like a little bit. I think a key thing is very important not to jump to conclusions, because it's usually something that happens maybe between two individuals, and don't jump and just make sure you kind of heard both sides like first before jumping to any conclusions, because sometimes it's not what it first seems, kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I think that's a really important thing to bear in mind sometimes, because you know there's a lot of randomness, this stuff, and surprising stuff sometimes. So yeah, it's important to do that, I think. And also, yeah, just to, you know, how you communicate stuff in general is obviously very important, but having the right sort of tone for dealing with these situations and being quite like careful and empathetic is very important as well.
Yeah, I think sometimes you just got to bring the hammer down, especially if they're making everyone else uncomfortable. Like if two people are having a long drawn out argument in like a public space within the community, I think usually it's best to just kick them both out and then decide afterwards, then kind of pick apart the decision in private with each of them. But you don't want that in the middle of the community, because that affects everybody else's experience too. Kind of, you want to take them outside, so to speak, and settle it there.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think maybe it's just like things that I've dealt with are a bit more like, I think, a gray area sort of thing. There's like less like really open and shut cases of like, right, this person clearly has to go, sort of thing.
Yeah, a lot of people just need some coaching too. You just have to tell them what the expectation is in your community, because they join, they don't necessarily know what the rules of the road are. Like mine is a public Slack, almost pretty much anybody can join, and so sometimes we get people or like spammers that come in, but a lot of those spammers are actually working on businesses, right? They could be contributing member of the community, which is like a little bit of a nudge. So maybe I'll block their links from getting expanded, and then I take them aside and say like, hey, this is kind of the rules. Maybe don't post your own links more than once a month. Keep it within the context of a conversation. And that's usually enough to like get people to correct course, and then they become kind of ideal members of the community after that. Because there's a pretty fine line between engagement and spamming, right? It's like you want people to be engaged and posting all the time in some ways, but you don't want them just posting their links all the time. You want this, so kind of, especially with Slack groups, like there's a lot where they're not moderated and people can just kind of do link drive-bys. And so just saying like, hey, this is not what we are, can be enough to get people to change course and contribute the way you want them to contribute.
Yeah, for sure.
That kind of is the same thing, right? You take them out back into a private channel. Say like, hey, here's the rules.
Yeah.
And then it's either, you know, you play by the rules or you don't get to be a part of the community anymore.
Yeah, certainly. Yeah, I think someone needs to make like a flow chart, like decision tree of how to approach different things. Like, I think, you know, is it in public? Is it in private? Like, is it clearly, do they actually know what the rules are? Like, there's lots of kind of questions you should ask yourself before deciding how to know what to do next. Yeah.
And it depends on the actual space you're in too, right? Like the rules of engagement are different in a physical space versus a virtual space, and even like a Slack group versus like a forum. Just the like geography of the place you're in affects the tools you have to moderate and to talk to people.
Mm.
And that pretty much, unless they're a bot, you're dealing with real people, and most people are reasonable, even online, once you talk to them one-on-one.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Easy to forget.
Mm.
All right, to wrap it up, what's your like grandest vision for Weekend Club? Say like 2 years from now, what does it look like?
Yeah, 2 years from now. So, you know, it's hard to say exactly like, oh, I want us to be this big, but I certainly want us to be available in 4 time zones from around the world. So, you know, if you're someone who has a day job and you're building something on a Saturday, you have a place to go to kind of do remote co-working with people on a Saturday. Also accommodating people during the week, of course. So, you know, I definitely want to be like working on it full time. So yeah, I would definitely want to be in a few time, multiple time zones, and I think I would like the in-person events to be on every continent by then as well. It's just about like, you know, making working on side projects a bit less lonely and creating a bit of a more of a support structure for people to do it. So you know, not sure exactly how big that would be, but definitely availability in many more time zones than now.
All right, Charlie Ward, thank you for coming on. Check him out on Twitter. Link's going to be in the description. If you're looking for a place to co-work virtually, definitely check out weekendclub.co. Thanks, man, for coming on.
Thanks, Anthony.